Views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Good morning, Northern California. We are back. California Adventure District Radio Show.
Morning.
Show number 17.
Thank you.
I'm one of your hosts, Nigel Skeet, my co-host, James Mazzotta from Enjoy.
Good morning.
And a bunch of other things. At this point, you're part of the CAD family, and I think I'm part of the Enjoy family, so
right.
It's kind of a kind of a cool thing.
It is.
Today's topic is going to be off the grid, but before we get started on that, I guess it should be noted that today is the 20-year anniversary of 9/11.
Yes, unfortunately.
Kind of a monumental event in United States history.
Listening to that in our headphones, and then you asked, wait, no, do you remember where you were, what you were
doing?
Do
you remember? Yeah.
So and I do. I mean, I was at that point I was working at KMS Hair Care, my father's business.
Mm-hmm.
And got a word when we got into the office that something was up, and we had a spare TV in the closet. We brought out, put on one of our light tables and turned it on, and our department kind of gathered around as we watched things unfold and just shock and horror. I mean, it was, couldn't believe it.
I had decided to open up a camera store in Beverly Hills, and that was my opening day.
Oh, you're sweet.
So that didn't last very long.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
So,
dreams dashed.
Crazy, crazy time.
Mm-hmm.
But it also brings into focus 20 years. Like that's a that's an interesting measure of time. Like all the stuff and all the experiences that we've had in 20 years. That's a kind of an interesting benchmark.
I know. Yeah. I guess you need that kind of little bit of measurement of time to really grasp how your life is working. Right. Like when I heard them just say 20 years, I thought 20 years. It sounds like forever and not that long at the same time, but then my brain went to at 20, I would have had a 3-year-old and then in a matter of months had a set of twins and then, left that business, opened a business,
So we'll get into a proper introduction of Sean here in a minute, but Sean, do you remember where you were on that day?
Yes, I was, at the time I was day trading and I remember I was sipping my first cup of coffee and watching the market, and then all of a sudden it shut down. And I switched over to a news feed, and as I did, I saw the footage of one of the planes hitting the building. Mm-hmm. And I remember it being kind of surreal. It was like it was something that couldn't ever happen. And especially to the United States, I think that I had a very false sense of security. And I think that that was a catalyst to awaken a lot of people and even onto the subject that we were going to be talking about today.
Well, and I don't even know that, I mean, for a while, like, I don't even know if you could wrap your head around that it was something bad, right? Like, I couldn't possibly think what was happening was deliberate. Like, it was like, how does an accident happen and then another accident? Like, you're like, I was in complete denial or naivety or something.
So, speaking of events, I mean, unless we're completely asleep, the world has changed over the last year or two.
Just a tad.
just a little bit. And there are a few topics that have grown exponentially in popularity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, I would say number one, is going to be is homeschooling, right? The whole subject of pulling your kids out of public school and homeschooling them.
And you see a lot of that in the news right now, and on YouTube and dirt and feeds and stuff. There are a lot of parents that are, there's a lot of controversy going on within states being allowed to do that. I mean, obviously you can, but I mean, really, actually, the states allowing there to be laws and things on the books where parents have the ability to get credits and take their kids where they want them to be educated, and for. Many reasons.
Sure.
So the whole topic of homeschooling and kids, parents being a little more responsible, feeling that responsibility for their kids and just yanking them out. And not all parents have a plan, right? But they know instinctively that's not what I want to subject my kids to. Now, the other one that I've noticed too, even within the California Venture District concept, is the topic of living off the grid, right?
We use that term a lot in CAD.
Yeah.
For different levels.
And obviously, I think this goes to, as you would say, levels of being awake, because the whole term off the grid has obviously been around for quite a while, right? Mm-hmm. And especially in our area. And especially over in Humboldt and over on the coast, there are quite a few people living off the grid. But that true definition of off the grid, I don't think was ever really clear. But people now are actually researching, hey, what if a time comes that I can't go to the grocery store and buy food, right? Mm-hmm. What happens if all those things are not accessible to me? So the whole...
Which I just saw last night, a little video clip of a woman that posted on YouTube. She went to the, I guess they call them Wally's. I don't know if it's the same.
In Australia?
In Australia.
Yeah, they're all empty.
They're empty. I mean, she's driving her little trolley around, or trolley cart, or whatever she called it, and I was like, there was literally nothing on the shelves.
Wow.
So this show is about living off the grid, and whatever that means to you. For some people, it means I'm unplugging completely from the grid, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Internet, phone, whatever, being completely self-sustaining. And our second guest at 8:30 is a professional off-the-gridder.
Cool.
He's a professional survivalist. His name is Britt Hart. He'll be with us at 8:30. He's joining us on the phone.
Yep. That should be awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
But our first guest is equally impressive. And if you're in on the Reading side of the of the district and you drive up and down I-5, I'm sure you've seen just south of Reading this big blue sphere, this big blue ball just sticking up there next to the
freeway.
Next to the freeway.
So yeah.
What is that? Right?
In a big open beautiful field that looks like it's been under management for a while, getting prepared for something, right? Clearing and growing and fencing and,
Precisely.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I've actually been out there a few times, and every time I go out there, I'm like, wow, this is kind of inspiring. Like, there's something there, right?
Mm-hmm. Mine is always like, what's that big blue ball doing? What are they doing
right.
with it?
So, you don't actually drive up to the gate and go through it and go, hey, what's going on here?
I haven't had time.
So we have with us Mr. Sean Kniep.
Kniep. Yes.
Got it. I got it right the second time.
Kniep.
That's right. He is out there full-time, I believe.
You have an impressive title, you told us.
Yeah. So, Sean, would you just give us an idea of what's going on there behind the blue ball, because I think it ties totally into living off the grid. And I think once people find out what's going on there, that if they actually wanted to have first-hand resources or experience or find out what they can do to even get started if they wanted to, that this is the ultimate
support,
place to,
help,
to
all
sew
that stuff.
Into.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's precisely what we're all about. We're not the end-all, do-all. We believe in enabling people. Our vision and mission are all centered and focused on a healthy planet, and that means healthy people, healthy plants, a healthy environment. So that's really where our focus is, and we are heavily involved in the agricultural area.
So the name of the organization?
Is Providence International.
Okay.
Which has been around for over 20 years now. We're in countries all over the world. Microfinancing.
Oh, that's right. Now I'm coming awake again.
Yeah, basically with $150, we can set a family up in a trade or an occupation or a business of their own. And so instead of feeding them for a period of time, you're actually making them self-sufficient. And about 5 years ago, Providence International said, okay, we're doing all these incredible things all over the world in these impoverished countries, but here in our own backyard, people are really suffering, and all over the United States. And
I think that's awesome. So, there's so many times I say to myself, it's wonderful to be able to help others, but how do you help others truly if you're not even helping yourself in a lot of cases?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of people would agree that if you can take care of yourself, then you're in a position to take care of other people.
Exactly.
And I think that if we adopt that mindset as a community and take ownership of our security when it comes to things like water and food and energy, and we localize that, then when things like what has happened with COVID come up, we'll be in a position to be able to handle that and not be, you know, imagine if the situation around toilet paper was happening around food. We saw how crazy it was when there wasn't enough toilet paper on the shelf.
Well, I think we'd get there. I think we're on that road. But I had a great tour yesterday. Sean gave me and a few others a really great tour of the facility, the greenhouse, and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, you guys, you were out there.
Yeah, I was out there. It's great. But we're up against our first break. So stay tuned, and we will be right back.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When selling your home, you're probably already aware of the marketing tools realtors use to get the job done. But do you know how those tools are being leveraged? Are you getting the best possible exposure? Or is your realtor just doing the bare minimum? Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor what their vision is for marketing your home. Every home tells a story, and your realtor should showcase that story, utilizing creative photography, aggressive internet advertising, print media, and more. In addition, make sure your property is being marketed to other areas. Before you choose a realtor to represent you, ask if they plan to target more than just local buyers. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure Vista Real Estate is on your list.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
Good morning, and we're back. Let's get right back into it with Sean from Providence International. Yeah. That nice big, what is it, 30, 60 acres behind that big blue sphere on the
I-5? Yeah, it's about 60 acres. About, I don't know, 36 of it is fenced in, and that was made possible through a grant through McConnell Foundation.
Oh, really? So the McConnells have even got behind it.
Yeah, and I should probably talk about a little bit about that particular site and what we're doing there. And,
yeah, because you gave me a great tour yesterday.
That yard work is, sure. So the idea was arrived at that property could be made into an agritourism location. Mm-hmm. And the idea is to develop, implement, and operate an agricultural, I don't want to say an agricultural venture.
Mm-hmm.
We want to really demonstrate how multiple agricultural processes or functions can be integrated, mm-hmm. so that we have true conservation of energy, whether that's labor, whether it's organic, what people might call organic waste, mm-hmm. which there's no such thing as waste. Everything can be an input for another process.
Mm.
So the idea is to set up an agricultural, I'm not thinking of the right word right now. Okay. Basically to set up a place where we can invite people from all over the world,
mm-hmm.
to come and see how agricultural agriculture can be done in a better way. And the idea is to not design it around like a commercial type of operation or any particular size, but to make it truly scalable so that people can do what we're doing in their backyard.
Sure.
They can convert their food waste into other
products. I was going to say, it sounds like this is kind of experimental. Like, you have obviously good practices and history within the company and organization, but you're using this space to really develop and test and you know, truly develop so that other people have models that they, like you said, can follow on either maybe a larger scale or much smaller scale.
Absolutely. And I think one thing that's important to bring out is that the things that we are doing down there, they're not original ideas. Mm-hmm. Many of them have been done for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
We're putting them together in a way to where we can demonstrate that we can reduce the greenhouse gas emissions through agricultural processes. Mm-hmm. Instead of increasing it. We can use 95% less water than in traditional. We can eliminate the use of fertilizers. We can eliminate the use of pesticides and herbicides.
Mm-hmm.
And simply by mimicking what nature already does, but putting it together in a perfect way, or as perfect as we can get. But all these things that we're doing, they've already been developed.
Mm-hmm.
And are in practice in other places. But we don't know if they've been integrated this way before.
Well, it's funny because there was this fun little experiment, I think it was last year, when they asked current kids in school, where does food come from? And they all say the store.
Store,
right? they don't know that, you know, tomatoes are actually grown and, mm-hmm. and you know, oranges and apples actually come from trees. They just think they're grown in the store somehow, somewhere.
And so, agritourism is huge.
Yes.
I mean, it's the thing that people forget all the time when we talk about, you know, California Adventure District, right? Like, farming, whatever you might see in agriculture, that is adventure to a lot of people.
Absolutely.
Right? So they love, people travel all over, like you said, literally all over the world for agritourism events, you know.
Can people come and tour the facility, or do we do groups where people can come and maybe pick your brain or learn how to, let's say somebody wanted to start their own backyard or their own, food pantry outside, right?
Mm-hmm.
Grow their own fruits and veggies and whatever
sure.
that looks like. How would they go about doing that, and can they come to you for advice to Providence?
Absolutely, and thank you for that question. One of the things that we've already done is partnered with the Shasta County Office of Education, and we are actually putting some of these systems that we are developing into schools. We already have one installed up at Big Bend, and they are growing in a hydroponic setup. They're growing their own vegetables for their lunches there that they eat at school. And we have several other schools lined up with similar projects as well. This is a huge opportunity to engage the youth,
mm-hmm.
especially in our local region. And when I say youth, I'm talking everything from grade school all the way up through college.
Sure.
And we're also in partnership with Shasta College to bring on some interns that are in agricultural programs that they have going.
Free workers.
Well,
60 acres is pretty big.
I know.
Yeah, and there's a tremendous opportunity to develop all kinds of ideas. We're very open toward the community in terms of community involvement. We encourage that. We love that. People that want to come out and learn gardening or hydroponics or worm farming or whatever it is, we always have things that we can engage people in. And also, we are putting together packages right now to where if someone is interested in being able to grow food for their family in the backyard in a 10x12 area, we can do that. We can set them up and help them become self-sufficient.
That's cool.
And so in talking about off-the-grid living, that's really what we're trying to do in off-the-grid agricultural practices.
Mm-hmm.
And that is to utilize the energy that we already have coming in that's free, like the sun. And we capture that, preferably with plants, and then use that plant to make energy, et cetera, in different forms. So the other thing that we're really focused on is helping the disadvantaged in this local region. And we bring people that either maybe they're coming out of incarceration or they've life circumstances have put them on the street or whatever. We feel like that's the greatest opportunity right now for us to have a significant impact. And so we have programs where people can come on and work with Providence and learn some job skills, job training. And then we try to place them into jobs that they want to be in, mm-hmm. in within the community. And we're also working with the city and with the county and with different organizations on providing temporary homeless shelter.
Mm.
And we're trying to do that in a way to where it won't be an end for them, but it'll get them off the street.
Yep.
And get them in a position to where they can get the help they need and get back on their feet. So those are all different things that we're involved with. And it all is focused around a healthy planet.
Sure. That's great. So if you are in, I would say some of the greater Shasta County and surrounding areas, you may want to reach out to Providence International. We'll give the contact information here shortly. How can people get in touch with you?
The best way to would be through our website, which is Providence Gardens, that's plural with an S, of hope.org. Providence Gardens of hope.org. There's contact information on there. And if you reach out to us through the website, there's phone numbers and everything if you'd rather call. But we'd be happy to talk to you about any interests that you might have.
Great. So if you have some 10 by 12 space in your backyard and you want to start growing food, how long would that take? I heard an interesting question yesterday. Well, how long does lettuce take? And it takes 4 weeks.
Yeah, actually, like yeah. And
that's now, one of my favorite things to grow because I'm successful with it. It grows fast, and I can literally just pick it and eat it right there.
Exactly. Isn't that great, too? That's when it tastes the best. Yeah, living food. That's what we want to do. And so we, you're absolutely right. If you have the right system, and in this case we're using aquaponics, so we're using the aquaculture to feed the plants in a hydroponic system. The cycle is about 4 weeks from seed to harvest for lettuce. Now, other varieties, they'll take a longer time. But the beautiful thing about a controlled environment, which you may hear it referred to as a CEA, Controlled Environment Agriculture. Yeah. The beautiful thing about that is that you're not subject to the different seasons, mm-hmm. the different environmental threats, whether that be infestation or whatever. There is a lot more control, and you can produce food year-round. So that's a really, really good way to go. But if you don't want to do the greenhouse...
And one of my favorite things that you talked about was localization, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like being able to, as a national scale, we have our, you know, our economy, how the whole system runs.
Yes.
But it would be nice that, you know, population centers, whatever they may be, have their localized ability to sustain themselves in the event of an emergency where, you know,
absolutely.
Like you said, you know, we can rely on the national. If that fails, then we have our backup.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely necessary. That we start moving in that direction.
You know, basics anyway.
Yeah.
Right. So we have one more minute left. I think this has been awesome. And I think in our community, I would love to see more community involvement in Providence. I think it's a great thing that's going on. And, you know, who knows? A few months from now or a year from now, you may just need your little 10 by 12 space in the backyard to eat from, right? So reach out to providencegardensofhope.org. I remember that. Or you can come to californiaadventuredistrict.com and we can connect you. But the whole agritourism is a big thing.
And I don't know if we've done a story in Enjoy yet, have we?
Not yet.
Oh. I will. There you go. That's the next one. So thank you very much. We will be right back with Britt.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When it comes to buying and selling real estate, one size does not fit all. Higher-priced homes sell differently than medium-priced homes. Make sure your realtor knows the difference and has the right tools to get your home sold for the highest price. Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor how they plan to sell your home and what they'll do differently to make your listing stand out. Ask your realtor what kind of experience they have in marketing and sales outside the real estate industry. Be sure to choose a realtor with solid marketing and sales training who also understands tech and internet advertising. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure to call the number one high-end home selling agent for the past 13 years, me.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
Good morning, Northern California. We're back. Mr. Jared, our engineer, keeps messing with me. That's all good.
I love the grin.
I had James's mic on and yours was off. I switched him.
Thank you very much.
Respect.
So speaking of being off the grid, if you were truly off the grid and you needed somebody to help you gather wood and squirrels, this next person calling in, Britt, are you there, buddy?
I am, Nigel. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. So on the phone with us is Mr. Britt Ahart. He is a professional survivalist.
Sweet.
He was on the History Channel's Alone. I think it was 2 seasons.
Very cool.
And if you needed somebody, like I said, to go with you and help you survive in the Mad Max hinterlands, this is the guy to do it. So, Britt, good morning. Where are you calling in from?
Good morning. We are down here in sunny Georgia. My family and I just recently relocated, so we left Ohio. Now I'm sitting out here in the hot area of Georgia, southern part.
That's excellent. So when I mention your name from Alone, people go, "Oh yeah, I remember that guy. I remember that guy." What can you give us an overview of how you got started in the whole concept of being professional survivalist, and then also how you got onto how your experience was on the History Channel show?
Well, I'll be the first one to tell you that I don't see myself as a pro. I just see myself as resilient and resourceful. I hate the term pro. I just figure stuff out. But in terms of how I got started, I mean, it all started with me as a young kid, more comfortable out in the woods by myself than hanging with groups of people. I mean, that blossomed into me camping and hiking and then in the Boy Scouts. And then as I got older, I just started, venturing a little bit further and trying to test myself a little bit more. And I kind of got onto the show Alone almost off of a dare from one of my friends. So that's how that all started in terms of me being on the television show. But,
what was the dare?
As a kid, I just enjoyed, I was kind of being an armchair quarterback when I was watching the people on the show saying, I could do that, or, why did he set up his shelter there, or, you couldn't catch fish this day, and I wasn't really, making fun of the participants. I was just saying, well, I would have done stuff different, and he was a longtime friend of mine. He was like, well, Britt, if you think you can do all that, you should, submit an application. So kind of like an affront to, his statement, I'm like, I'm going to do it. So I filled out the paperwork, and, lo and behold, I got a call 6 months later, and then I had to tell my wife that they wanted me on the show.
So you finally you put your money where your mouth was, because a lot of us sit in the chair and watch these shows and go, oh, man, well, you know, that was stupid. Why'd you make that dumb decision?
Yeah, so, I mean, I guess I wasn't sure what I was getting into, but I just did it to prove to him, you know, I'm going to try to do it just because you say I can't do it.
So for those who didn't watch, where did you end up going?
I spent 35 days out in the wilderness of Argentina, down in the Patagonian region, and then another 56 days in Mongolia.
Oh, my gosh.
So those are both fantastic experiences for me. I really, really took a lot out of them.
All by yourself?
All by my lonesome, freezing my butt off out there.
And
I don't realize how cold that show really gets.
And so was it one of those things that a few days into it, you were like, what the heck have I gotten myself into, or did you really enjoy it?
Well, it was both of those. The first time I got there, I had no idea what was going on, so I was kind of like scared and running around all scattered brain, trying to do all the million things I thought I prepared myself for. Second time around, I was a little more focused, so I was able to kind of ease into the situation and find myself trying to, like, coincide and work with nature, as opposed to the first time when I was, like, battling against the elements, thinking I'm going to beat nature up and, you know, I'm going to make this place, you know, where I'm supposed to be. So I learned a lot between the first and the second time. Much more casual the second time.
Is that, I've heard people refer to that, like you just said, you can either fight it or embrace it. And when you embrace it, you actually do better, right?
Absolutely. There's no beating Mother Nature. So, I mean, I realized that after the first time of me trying to go to the extreme, you know, with my skills and my efforts. But in the second instance, where I was kind of like trying to develop some sort of symbiotic relationship, and I understood, like, okay, this is the best I'm going to do in this situation. Let me try and work with it this way and work with it this way and yield as much as I can and understand that I'm not going to be able to get what I want. I have to use what I'm given.
That's awesome. So I'm going to ask you a question that I'm sure is a fifth grade question. I'm sure you get asked 100 times. And that, you know, what were some of the more dangerous situations that you found yourself into, either naturally or animals or wildlife? Or what were some of those experiences for you?
I'll say in terms of my experiences, the danger came from the level of fatigue and trying to do stuff that you can't do when you're as physically and mentally exhausted as I was, like trying to, you know, swing an axe, which is normally something very easy and simple to do. But when your coordination is way off and you're, you know, you don't have your balance right, I almost took off my ankle in one of the scenes that has never made the air. So just rudimentary things that you do day to day because your motor skills are so inhibited from the lack of nutrition, that was something that was very dangerous to me. I had to be careful and pace myself. In terms of the animals, that was always a threat, but I tried to, like, stave off my fear and keep it in the background because I didn't want that to rule my thought process. There was definitely the threat of cougars, bear, wolf, moose, the boar were all over the place. We had pit vipers. So the element of danger that the animals imposed upon us was always very prevalent. I just try to not let that fear run me. So I think the most dangerous thing for me, or being careful, was not trying to overexert or do something because my level of energy was so low. You have to pace yourself so you don't do something reckless.
Every show that I've ever watched that's, you know, would be in the same kind of vein that you're talking about, it seems to be that. I would say that would be true as well, because any of the contestants or people that are on the show always seem to get hurt when they are at that level of exhaustion. The one that always sticks out to me was the one where the guy passed out, and he passed out right into the fire pit. Passed out and landed in an open fire and burned himself. Like, just, you know, stuff like that just happens, right?
Yeah, it's a level of fatigue that you can't really emulate in normal day-to-day life because we have so much food, or, you know, there's access when you need it. But it gets to be a point where it's not mind over matter. Your body is telling you you're not going to lift that. You're not going to walk there. Don't try and step over this branch because your foot's not going to get high enough. I mean, there were a couple times I went face first, stepping over something that was a foot tall just because you're so exhausted you can't mentally push your body to do things that it refuses to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can get hurt doing simple stuff. So you just have to be mindful of that. And that's what I try to be most careful of.
I wanted to know the differences between real quick, because, you know, obviously the locations, were they significantly different as far as, like, terrain? I mean, I think of Mongolia. I guess I don't have a good picture of what Mongolia looks like versus...
Okay, well, versus Argentina?
Argentina, yeah.
Yeah, it's drastically different. I mean, it was a lot more up and down and a ritty terrain where we were in Argentina, because it was so, you know, lush with the moisture and, you know, the foliage and everything. So it was totally drastically different as opposed to the sandy, hard terrain of Mongolia. So it was basically flat versus, you know, mountainous.
Yeah, that's what I kind of envisioned, yeah. But I wanted to hear that from you to know specifically. Yeah. I was thinking those are two totally different survival, or the necessity to survive is, you know, very different.
So for those who
different.
So for those who are questioning, I used to question these shows. In your show, there wasn't actually a camera crew, right? Like, you had to do your own filming. Is that the way it worked?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this show is totally self-documented, and I think that's one of the aspects that makes it totally unique and genuine, because not only is the person out there by themselves shooting everything, but you get to see the artistic angles and views and perspectives from each participant. So it's almost like a whole bunch of shows blended together, you know, a whole bunch of different eyes and angles and thoughts blended together into one collaboration. So there's nobody out there.
Wow.
I always have to attest to the legitimacy of actually being alone. We are truly alone, except when they show up, you know, to check us to see if we're still alive.
So do you start talking to yourself after a while?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a person that generally moves around talking to myself, just because, I don't know, I like to voice my thoughts. You know, they kind of materialize better when I can hear them through my own ears. But, yeah, I did a lot of talking to myself. I mean, you can watch any of us on the episodes. I don't know, maybe me in particular, because I always tend to discuss my processes and things out loud. But, yeah, you have to hear a voice, at least me. It's too silent if there's nothing, because there's nobody talking back to you. So you start to have conversations with yourself and answer your own questions and say jokes to make yourself laugh, and you kind of get to the brink of where, you know, you're on the precipice of maybe losing it a little. So, yeah, it does a lot of strange things to your brain in extreme isolation.
Okay, so, James, if we do this, then so the tip so far is to bring your own joke book.
Right.
Like the daily jokes, right?
Right.
Joke of the day kind of thing. Maybe have 365. So what did you eat?
Yuck.
I spent a lot of time eating fish. I ate some mice. I was eating grasshoppers. I was eating a lot of the local plants in the area, you know, some mushrooms, plantains, things of that nature, the rose hips. But there were stints. I mean, I never planned on being a vegetarian, but there were like 3 week stints where I was eating nothing but plants. And that does crazy things to somebody who's like unwilling and kicking and screaming because you want some red meat. But yeah, so I between the two times I was on the show, the first time I was on the 35 days, I averaged losing a pound a day. So
wow.
The first time I lost 35 pounds, and the second time I lost 50 pounds.
Whoa.
So just to watch yourself undergo that rapid transformation of, you know, the atrophy of all your muscle. So not only are you getting super skinny, you're super alone, you're super weak. So all these things play a crazy, you know, psychological, there's a whole lot of things going on in your brain just to try and, you know, focus and do things, because you're watching yourself dwindle away to a fraction of your normal size.
When you come back and you get the opportunity to eat, does regular food not sit well with you in the beginning, or does your body take back to it pretty quickly?
Well, let's see. I went to the hospital both times, so if that gives you any sort of indication. And I would say it's because we were so deprived of, like, anything as simple as salt.
Yeah.
So the first time you get a little bit of salt in some food, I was gorging. Like, even though my stomach was super, super full, my brain kept telling me I was starving.
Yeah.
And I couldn't control it. So I kept eating and eating and eating, and I ate myself to the hospital the first time. I ate too much salt, and my body was all swollen up. The second time, they had a regimen for us to reintegrate ourselves into a naturally balanced diet,
mm-hmm.
which I totally ignored because I was hungry all the time and I couldn't sleep because my sleeping pattern was all off and I happened to have my room directly next to the kitchen. So I would just go to the kitchen and eat and eat and eat. And I also learned one thing, that when you're that far inland as Mongolia, don't eat the seafood. So I ate a tuna sandwich, and I ultimately had to go to the hospital for that. So, I mean, there's ways you need to integrate yourself back in to having, you know, that much food and that much different stuff for your body to process. Because when you're just eating plants and fish, you know, day in and day out, your body, at least mine did, started to adjust to that. So then when I just bombarded it with all this processed food and things from the stores, then it couldn't handle it. And like I said, you know, I ate myself to the hospital.
Great. So listen, so when we come back, there's actually a local connection to Mr. Britt Hart.
Oh, yeah.
To our community.
Cool.
And to California Adventure District.
All right.
So, Britt, thanks for hanging on. And when we get back, we're gonna touch on that. Thanks, buddy.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When selling your home, you're probably already aware of the marketing tools realtors use to get the job done. But do you know how those tools are being leveraged? Are you getting the best possible exposure? Or is your realtor just doing the bare minimum? Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor what their vision is for marketing your home. Every home tells a story, and your realtor should showcase that story, utilizing creative photography, aggressive internet advertising, print media, and more. In addition, make sure your property is being marketed to other areas. Before you choose a realtor to represent you, ask if they plan to target more than just local buyers. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure Vista Real Estate is on your list.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
Good morning. We're back. We're going to get right back into it. The California Venture District Radio Show, number 17. My name is Nigel, my co-pilot, James, and we actually have Mr. Sean here in the studio with us, and on the phone, Mr. Britt Hart. We're not going to call you professional survivalist anymore. We'll just call you professional, adapter to the circumstances?
How about an ad hoc survivalist?
There you go, ad hoc survivalist. So there's actually a local connection to Mr. Britt Hart, and that's our good friend Kevin Cry, who runs Ninja Coalition and Valor Talent Group. He's actually your agent, manager, friend, dude, person.
Yeah, my representation. Yes.
There you go.
My representation.
Great. So we've actually been talking. So there's a few things. Britt, I believe you're coming out at some point towards the end of the year here to Shasta County, and you're going to be doing some You're going to be doing something with the schools, correct? That's the idea.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. So we are putting together a project where I'm going to be working with some schools out there, ages kindergarten through eighth grade, and we'll be talking about, you know, some fundamentals of survival, you know, setting up campsites, fire safety, some fishing, some trapping, and things of that nature, just to get kids, you know, like you were mentioning before, getting more children outside, getting them more in tune with the outdoors, exposing some kids to camping and something that they might not normally have been exposed to, and just in an effort to, you know, teach and inform and encourage, you know, some of the kids to do some of the stuff that I enjoy and that I think would maybe enlighten them and maybe change their perspective on, you know, ways to live and things to do for enjoyment. Also get some knowledge, you know. It's very good to have knowledge like this, which I have grown to understand throughout the course of my life and as I've gotten older and I'm teaching to my son and family, so, you know, that's what we're going to try and do. I think it's going to be great.
That's awesome. And then, even though unfortunately we couldn't get a permit for it this year because of the fires, we're actually going to be doing a California off-the-grid survival expedition, I'm hoping beginning in the spring, summer next year, with Britt.
So, yeah, I hope so.
We're going to actually do a survival expedition up here, up in Siskiyou, Klamath. We'll send four or five people into the forest with Britt, and good luck to you in about 5 days.
That'll be awesome.
Right?
Feel, hey, you know what? At first I was like, that's crazy, and then... Obviously, it's like if I was with Britt, I'd be totally cool. I just say, tell me what you want me to do, and I'll do my best.
So,
well, I'll tell you, like, necessity is the mother of invention. So you get out there and you need something, you will figure it out. And that's what I found when I was on the show. Like, there was a lot of things I didn't know how to do it when I was before I got into that instance. But then you're looking at it like, I need to make this happen. What can I do? And your mind will start to create, and you'll figure things out. So, I mean, yeah, it's just.
I think it would be a little. I think it would be a little hard for me to figure out how to put together a Winnebago.
How do you create a microwave out of space?
Yeah, right.
Okay. Yeah, right. Well, it takes a certain type of plant. It doesn't grow in all areas, but if you find that microwave bud.
So, let me ask you this, because. You know, this is the sign of the times, right? So a lot of people are inquiring about living off the grid and being self-sustaining. So even though those first two experiences you described are competitions, shall we say, if you were to adapt it, adapt your experiences to such a way, could you make it something that was semi-permanent? Could you make it a semi-permanent way to exist, right?
Well, yeah, and that's another thing, to, you know, to go back to the show is we are trying to actually homestead on the show. We're not permitted to be, you know, nomadic and travel too far out of a certain area, so we are tasked with creating a, you know, a shelter where we can actually, you know, reside for an indeterminate amount of time. So a lot of the things that we're doing on the show as far as shelter building, you know, gathering tools to make fire and creating fire, food acquisition, water gathering and purification are all kind of the basics of creating a homestead. So, you know, in watching this show, you can actually learn some of the basic fundamentals of what you need to do if you were in a situation where you needed to create something permanent.
So I think we need someone like Sean to come along with you. I'm sure you'll meet him when you're here. And so he can help with carving out the 10 by 12 space. So you can help create that permanent homestead grown. Sean, what do you say?
No, I would love the opportunity just to hang out with this guy. I mean, man after my own heart. This is awesome.
If we were trying to start, we wouldn't be so
rustic if we were trying to like do this right now, because we'd be afforded a lot more tools and technology to begin something. So it wouldn't be as bare bones and basic as the show was, but it just gave you a lot of tips and tools and, you know, places where to start if you're, you know, from ground zero trying to figure out what to do.
So it's not like if you wanted to try living off the grid, you have to go start in Mongolia. You could actually start in, you know, in Weaverville.
Right. Right. And you might have more than 10 items, you know.
Right. So who came in first?
Let's see. On season 3, well, obviously there's been, I think, 8 seasons to this point, maybe 9, I don't know, 8 seasons. But the season I was on, the guy who came in first place is a guy named Zach Fowler, and he was out there for 87 days.
And do you still communicate at all with any of your fellow contestants?
I do, with a few of them. Some of them are really close friends, especially our closest friend of the family is Carly Fairchild, and she was on seasons 3 and 5 with me. So yeah, we developed a very close relationship with her, and so she's been around ever since day one of me showing up for boot camp and for Argentina, the season 3.
That's great. So when you do come out, I do think we need to introduce you to Sean and all the things that are going on at Providence, because it is about survival and it is about being self-sustaining. So I think we'll have to talk to Kevin. I think we can work something out.
Yeah, right.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
So great. Well, listen, Britt, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I know you probably have a lot of things to do. We will stay in touch, and we will communicate with our community when Britt is coming out.
Super excited about
that. You can go to CaliforniaOffTheGrid.com. It actually leads to a page on California Adventure District where you can actually sign up your little email address if you're even remotely interested in going out in the middle of nowhere with Britt for a couple days.
Do it.
We do need to talk about the format of that, how we want to do that. But I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, we do.
And you never know. Yep. You might have the experience of running into Bigfoot too.
Well, you know, this is Bigfoot.
That's always a plug.
This is Bigfoot Central, so you never know, especially up in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
So Britt, thank you very much for coming on, my friend.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I enjoyed it, guys. Thank you very much.
We'll see you.
Talk soon.
That's gonna be super exciting.
Off the grid.
Yeah. Well, this is the one. I mean, there's things obviously in the pipeline through CAD that, you know, have been worked on for quite some time. This was one of the ones that I was really excited for, just because I think it's not that I would personally do it, and not because I don't want to, but I physically just probably couldn't make it. But I'd have to train for it.
I think you need to go help Sean. Yeah. You know, once
you gonna hook me up to the plow.
Well, so Sean gave us a tour yesterday, and I was impressed with all the stuff that's going on.
Sure.
I think we only have a few minutes, but so what was going on in that greenhouse, for example?
Well, we've got aquaculture going on in there. Or aquaponics. So we have the aquaculture, which is we're raising fish.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. I just kept hearing aquaponics. So
okay. Aquaculture is the raising of fish.
Sure.
And then we extract their waste from that water.
To feed the plants.
To feed the plants. Yeah, we process it. And it's all natural processes. The things that are doing the work are bacteria.
Sure. As I've been reading in life right now, it all comes back to bacteria. Bacteria, fungus.
Microbes.
We're all
life comes from the soil.
Yeah, we're all made up of them and we didn't even know it.
Yeah. Yeah, about 20 pounds of microbes in and on each of us.
Yeah. It's creepy, but, you know. Well, I mean, hey, look at fish. What do you know, right? I mean, the whole story of what are the Native Americans throwing a fish underneath each corn seed, you know.
Oh,
and
that's
they
legit.
Were. I know, right? I know.
Yeah,
it's amazing how something so old has to come right back. You know.
Yeah, and it's really cool too, because we're seeing how science is just affirming the practices that have been around for many, many centuries, and they just understood the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's alive.
Like Britt, you know, I loved how he was talking about kind of living with nature instead of trying to, you
beat
know,
it.
Fight against it.
Yeah. She'll whip
and
you.
And that's what's
Mother
that?
Nature. She'll whip you.
Exactly. And she's already figured out the best way to do it.
Yeah.
So let's learn from her.
Right. So I'm thinking that may be something that we could... I'm always brainstorming, right?
Yep.
So this might be a fun thing to be able to pursue, even through Providence and through someone like Britt, being able to teach especially the younger generation on how to live with nature. Can you imagine if we were the first community that you could actually say, yeah, we're off the grid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And be completely self-sustaining.
Well, it wouldn't be hard in the sense, I mean, obviously it would take stuff, but I say that when you come to, we're the second sunniest city in North America, right?
Right.
Who wants to go to Tucson anyway?
Yeah, right. I mean, we should be able to harness that power, right? I mean,
absolutely.
When you think of statistics that there's enough energy bombarding the earth from the sun every minute or something to fuel all mankind for, you know, 100 years. I mean, it's pretty sad.
That's great. Okay, so with our last minute, I want to thank you for coming on.
Yeah,
if
really,
you are
you.
In our community, I highly recommend checking out what's going on behind the blue sphere.
Yeah.
Right? ProvidenceGardensOfHope.org or come to CaliforniaAdventureDistrict.com. This is definitely something we want to help grow, the whole agritourism piece, the whole off the grid thing, with Britt. Britt is going to be an integral part of the California Adventure District experience. So
Agra Adventure.
That's right. Yeah, well, you can head that up.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's it. We're off the grid. Well, we're on the grid now, but we're going off the grid now.
We are.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, North State.
See you next week.
All right.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.